no mathematics, made no mention of any work that had influenced or preceded it, and acknowledged the help of just one individual, a colleague at the patent office named Michele Besso. It was, wrote C.P. Snow, as if Einstein had reached the conclusions by pure thought, unaided, without listening to the opinions of others. To a surprisingly large extent, that is precisely what he had done. His famous equation, E equals mc squared, did not appear with the paper, but came in a brief supplement that followed a few months later. As you will recall from school days, E in the equation stands for energy, m for mass, and c squared for the speed of light squared. In simplest terms, what the equation says is that mass and energy have an equivalence. They are two forms of the same thing. Energy is liberated matter. Matter is energy waiting to happen. Since c squared, the speed of light times itself, is a truly enormous number, what the equation is saying is that there is a huge amount, a really huge amount of energy bound up in every material thing. How c came to be the symbol for the speed of light is something of a mystery, but David Bodanis suggests it probably came from the Latin celeritas, meaning swiftness. The relevant volume of the Oxford English Dictionary, compiled a decade before Einstein's theory, recognizes C as a symbol for many things, from carbon to cricket, but makes no mention of it as a symbol for light or swiftness. You may not feel outstandingly robust, but if you are an average-sized adult, you will contain within your modest frame no less than 7 times 10 to the power of 18 joules of potential energy. Enough to explode with the force of 30 very large hydrogen bombs, assuming you knew how to liberate it and really wished to make a point. Everything has this kind of energy trapped within it, which is not very good at getting it out. Even a uranium bomb, the most energetic thing we have produced yet, releases less than 1% of the energy it could release if only we were more cunning. Among much else, Einstein's theory explained how radiation worked, how a lump of uranium could throw out constant streams of high-level energy without melting away like an ice cube. It could do it by converting mass to energy extremely efficiently, a la E equals mc squared. It explained how stars could burn for billions of years without racing through their fuel. Ditto. At a stroke, in a simple formula, Einstein endowed geologists and astronomers with the luxury of billions of years. Above all, the special theory showed that the speed of light was constant and supreme. Nothing could overtake it. It brought light, no pun intended, exactly, to the very heart of our understanding of the nature of the universe. Not incidentally, it also solved the problem of the luminiferous ether by making it clear that it didn't exist. Einstein gave us a universe that didn't need it. Physicists, as a rule, are not over-attentive to the pronouncements of Swiss patent office clerks, and so, despite the abundance of useful tidings, Einstein's papers attracted little notice. Having just solved several of the deepest mysteries of the universe, Einstein applied for a job as a university lecturer, and was rejected, and then as a high school teacher, and was rejected there as well. So he went back to his job as an examiner third class. But of course he kept thinking. He hadn't even come close to finishing yet. When the poet Paul Valéry once asked Einstein if he kept a notebook to record his ideas, Einstein looked at him with mild but genuine surprise. "Oh, that's not necessary," he replied. "It's so seldom I have one." I need hardly point out that when he did get one, it tended to be good. Einstein's next idea was one of the greatest that anyone has ever had, indeed the very greatest, according to Bohrs, Mots, and Weaver in their thoughtful history of atomic science. "As the creation of a single mind," they write, "it is undoubtedly the highest intellectual achievement of humanity," which is of course as good as a compliment can get. In 1907, or so it has sometimes been written, Albert Einstein saw a workman fall off a roof and began to think about gravity. Alas, like many good stories, this one appears to be apocryphal. According to Einstein himself, he was simply sitting in a chair when the problem of gravity occurred to him. Actually, what occurred to Einstein was something more like the beginning of a solution to the problem of gravity, since it had been evident to him from the outset that one thing missing from the special theory was gravity. What was special about the special theory was that it dealt with things moving in an essentially unimpeded state. But what happened when a thing in motion, light above all, encountered an obstacle such as gravity? It was a question that would occupy his thoughts for most of the next decade and lead to the publication in early 1917 of a paper entitled Cosmological Considerations on the General Theory of Relativity. The Special Theory of Relativity of 1905 was a profound and important piece of work, of course, but as C.P. Snow once observed, if Einstein hadn't thought of it when he did, someone else would have, probably within 5 years. It was an idea waiting to happen. But the general theory was something else altogether. Without it, wrote Snow in 1979, it is likely that we should still be waiting for the theory today. With his pipe, genially self-effacing manner, and electrified hair, Einstein was too splendid a figure to remain permanently obscure, and in 1919, the war over, the world suddenly discovered him. Almost at once, his theories of relativity developed a reputation for being impossible for an ordinary person to grasp. Matters were not helped, as David Bonanis points out in his superb book, E equals MC squared, when the New York Times decided to do a story and, for reasons that can never fail to excite wonder, sent the paper's golfing correspondent, one Henry Crouch, to conduct the interview. Crouch was hopelessly out of his depth and got nearly everything wrong. Among the more lasting errors in his report was the assertion that Einstein had found a publisher daring enough to publish a book that only 12 men in all the world could comprehend. Well, there was no such book, no such publisher, no such circle of learned men, but the notion stuck anyway. Soon the number of people who could grasp relativity had been reduced even further in the popular imagination, and the scientific establishment, it must be said, did little to disturb the myth. When a journalist asked the British astronomer Sir Arthur Eddington if it was true that he was one of only three people in the world who could understand Einstein's relativity theories, Eddington considered deeply for a moment and replied, "I'm trying to think who the third person is." In fact, the problem with relativity wasn't that it involved a lot of differential equations, Lorentz transformations, and other complicated mathematics, though it did, even Einstein needed help with some of it, but that it was just so thoroughly non-intuitive.